Welcome to the Women Shifting Gears podcast, driven by Hemmings. I'm your host, Amanda Busick. Our podcast aims to introduce you to the inspirational women who showcase their talents and leaderships across the automotive and motorsports worlds. And even when I have my own moments of doubt and uncertainty, it is with this community of women that I am reminded of what is possible. Thank you all for sharing in this space of authenticity with us. Here we go. By title, Anya Kimperman is the U.S. Events Manager, Race Series Manager at the Masters Historic Racing. But it is her insatiable love of speed and racing that will shine front and center in our Women Shifting Gears podcast driven by Hemmings. We catch up with the German native on her recent move to Daytona in January, setting her sights on growing out the series on North American soil, achieving her father's support in her non-traditional career path, and why happiness is always a choice. Our milestone 50th conversation with yet another inspiring and influential female in automotive starts now. Welcome to the Women Shifting Gears podcast, driven by Hemmings. On this episode, the 50th episode of the podcast, joining us is Anya Kimperman. She is the U.S. Event Manager and the Race Series Manager for the Masters Historic Racing. And I think you guys are going to absolutely love learning about Anya and as well as this series. Anya, welcome in to the podcast. I want to start right there. What is Masters Historic Racing?
Well, Masters Historic Racing was launched in the UK by my boss, Ron Maiden, and my colleague, Rachel Bailey, in 2004, actually, starting with historic Formula One cars, which were from the period 1966 to 85. And then Masters started growing. So we purchased several other series, which was, for example, in 2005, Group 4 Racing, which are the sports cars, which brought me into the game 2005 because I was running the Group 4 race cars. And then it continued with touring cars, grand touring cars. The latest edition was Masters Endurance Legends, which are the prototypes and GT cars. And in 2014, Ron decided to purchase Masters Historic Grand Prix here in the US, which were the Formula One cars in the US, which is the series I'm running here now. And these are three other series as well, like Masters Endurance Legends, which we launched in 2019, and then Masters Formula Atlantic Plus, which is Vintage Atlantics, Formula 2s, and Super V's, which we launched last year.
And you talk about Formula One cars, obviously vintage or historic Formula One cars, but these are individuals that are now driving these cars, right?
Correct. Yes. These are all our drivers are actually gentleman drivers. Some have co-drivers, which are pro drivers, but it's very rare. Most of them are literally gentleman drivers enjoying their hobbies. Yes.
So, and just to expand on that, the gentleman driver, kind of like that customer racing side of the sport, how does one become a gentleman driver?
Well, usually they become interested in cars, and some start with SCCA doing driver schools, or they have their own coaches, and or they come through Ferrari Challenge, which has the gentleman driver section with the club racing. Or they were racing in period, actually. We have some drivers which were racing in period with Grand Am and Accent Series and all that stuff. So, and then they decide to do that because of being able to have the time or being retired. So they are mainly a little bit older than usually race car drivers are. And so they start racing and then they become our customers. Yeah.
I think it's just fascinating that as an individual and obviously with the right financial support, but even just the love of the craft that you can hop in Formula One cars and drive on legendary racetracks across the world. We said gentlemen drivers. Do we have any gentlewomen participating in the series at this point?
We had one co-driver with one in the Masters Endurance Legends, but usually the women, I think Masters Endurance Legends will be more a series which women can join us or will join us, but the Formula Ones and the Formula Atlantics, there are not too many women which are getting into the cars. So that's, yeah, we have other series which are in other sanctioning bodies like HSR. So there you have women drivers, but they are mainly in the touring cars or in the grand touring cars.
How about you? Have you gotten in the cars?
I have been. It's kind of years ago. It was beginning 2000s at Spa with a Belgium team, which actually is the team brought me into racing. I was in a 1971 Lotus 69 Formula 3 car, and I was in a 1973 Porsche 911 SCRS. And it was pouring down rain in Spa, as usual.
Of course.
I ended up in the gravel once, but I made it. And I did some laps, and it was really, really great. It was great fun. And I had some co-drives as well. I had the fortune to be in the Spa's GTP car, Spa, as a passenger, and with Ferdinand Lesseps. It's an ex-Le Mans driver, and he showed me what G-crafts and speed means. It was amazing. It was so incredible.
Well, by this point, our audience definitely knows that there is an accent for you. Where do you hail from?
I'm originally from Germany, Frankfurt. I grew up there, but since I was a little child, I always told my parents, I think I don't want to live in Germany. I want to live abroad, because I was always interested in different cultures, different languages. Yeah, my way made me go to Austria for a while. I lived there for 6 years, and then I lived 4 years in the UK, and that brought me here to the States.
Do you remember... You said a racing team brought you into kind of this part of your career for yourself. But growing up in Germany, I imagine the car and the automobile might have a significance on your childhood. What was your interaction with cars early on?
When I was 5 years old, I walked through the streets with my dad, and I saw then a Jaguar E-Type and a vintage Porsche 911. And I said, like, oh, these are cool cars. And my dad said, like, oh no, that goes in the wrong direction. But we never had a family background into racing, or we were never connected to any automotive stuff or so. So it's actually my racing bug I got when I was working for Accenture, and we were sponsoring BMW Williams. That was 2001. And I went to these events at Hockenheim and Zeldwijk, which is now the Red Bull Ring. And, well, I was overwhelmed. I was so excited. And working with the racing teams and being at the racetrack and having this sound and this speed and all that stuff, that definitely got me the book. And a friend of mine asked me if I want to come to test day at Spa, which was a vintage test day and a private test day. And there I met this team, Mac Auto, in Belgium, which then asked me to join them for traveling with them. And I did like cleaning tires, holding timing boards, cleaning the helmets for the drivers, looking after them. And that made me travel through the whole European racetracks. And then somebody introduced me to Jonathan Baker, who was running Group 4 Racing, and he needed somebody running his events. And there it all started.
I believe from my just research into your background, the early part of your career, your first chapter, I guess, you had a healthcare background?
Well, kind of. I studied marketing and conventions and did that at the fairground in Frankfurt. And I was in several marketing agencies, but then started working for the German Cancer Society, which brought me into contact with all these surgeons, doctors, professors, etc. And I organized conventions up to 5,000 people. And that was for radio oncologists, other oncologists, for the German Cancer Society, for the surgeons, for the trauma surgeons. So I worked for pharma companies as well. But when I was self-employed, I did that as well. But then I also worked for a bank, Federal State Bank in Bavaria. And then I worked for the wine business in Austria. And then I became self-employed again and started working again more in racing. And then I became fully employed for masters in 2018.
When you were kind of going through that transition from kind of a formal career into racing, did you have any hesitation on if this would work out?
No. I'm kind of, and my family is always amazed by this, I always do a thing and think, if it goes wrong, I can always go back. So I have my education, I have all my work experience. And I think if you don't try, then you will never see if it will work. And racing is definitely my passion, and therefore I never see my job as a job. It's my life. It's my passion, and I enjoy it so much that I did never think it goes wrong. There's always a way forward. Even if this one door closes, another goes open.
What do you love about racing?
First of all, the cars, the noise, the speed. But racing is family. You have that in modern racing, and you have that in vintage racing as well. The people around you, they are supporting you with everything. They are so good friends. You can rely on them. And it's just a different kind of people. It's a very, very small world, but it's a very supportive and very great world to work in. So, and to live in. I have never had so many contacts and friends in other branches or in other areas of business.
Well, working in this business has brought you to a brand new chapter in your life. You made a move all the way to the United States earlier this year. Where are you based out of?
Daytona Beach, I chose because it's my happy place. I was thinking, like, when my visa was approved, I was like, where do you go to live? Where do you go? And it was like Atlanta, Chicago, California. And my boss always said, like, if you go to California, you have to find another employer because I cannot afford having you there. So in the end, I realized every time when I came to Daytona, my heart made a little bip, and it was like, yeah, back home. And I have friends here, and I love the racetrack. And yeah, it's just nice. You have racing and you have beach. What can be better?
Well, I think it to have a background in racing, I think you ended up at the racing capital of the United States, that's for sure. And I want to get back to kind of this new role as the race series manager in the U.S. I was looking over the schedule for the Masters Historics, and you guys are hitting some iconic places in North America. I mean, anywhere from IMS to Mosport in Canada, Watkins Glen. As you get familiar with this American side of racing, what inspires you?
Look, I started doing the races in Europe and America 2018. And my boss said when I was ready to go to the first race, which was Portland, actually, okay. Anya, just be aware of it is totally different to the European racetracks. Like, oh, really? Is it? So he didn't say much, but he said, like, don't be too German. Just enjoy it. And get the experience. So I came to Portland, which is a unique, and I was looking for race control. Yeah, that's upstairs in the tower. And I said, like, right, okay. So I went upstairs into the tower, and the race director was in there, and I was like, where are the screens? Where are the So I had no idea that America is actually, if it doesn't come to IMSA or IndyCar, is not working with big TV screens and race control and all that stuff. And I said, like, how do you find out if an accident happens or if there were contact or somebody had a spin? Corner marshals, we communicate. I was like, right. Okay. So that became a total new experience. And some circuits are better stuffed with TV screens and race control equipment, etc. But it's fascinating how that works, and it works the same as when you have TV screens, because the corner marshals and the race directors, they are so used to speak to each other and to work with each other, and being on the radio and included in the communication, you learn how that works, and it is amazing. It's just great. So that's a total different way, and the tracks are in a different formation, and they are in a different setup. In Europe, for example, you have always big walls and fences, and here you stand at the wall and you think, like, wow, this is just like 200 miles an hour, and that passed me at this little wall. So it's totally different, but it's amazing. It's it's a much more relaxed atmosphere here, at least in the vintage racing, than it is in Europe. And that makes it unique.
I think it's always hard to pick a favorite racetrack. It's like having to pick your favorite child. And I just don't think it's fair to ask that of someone. But I do think in the U.S. we have a blend of modern tracks, but we also have the ones that are, you know, more purist and true from the Glen. I know you guys are hitting that this year. Road America, VIR. Are there spots that you like to hit around the U.S.?
I mean, I have not been to all tracks yet. And of course, I have my favorites, but it's always a little bit depending on the event itself as well. Last weekend, I just have been to Barber Motorsports Park, which is actually a very European track formation, but it's one of the most beautiful and nicest facilities I've ever seen. Road America is one of my favorite tracks. It's fast and it's great. But there are so many other racetracks I would like to see. I haven't been to VIR, for example. And then you have street circuits, of course, like Belle Isle coming up next week. I think if I had to pick one right now, maybe Watkins Glen or Road America. Yeah.
Oh, darn. If you had to pick one, those are two good ones to throw at the top of the list. I did the Masters Historics. The other thing that I think is pretty neat, and I hope I looked at the schedule correctly, but it looks like at some of these races, you guys are a support series for an IMSA or for an Indy car. When these guys get to share track with professionals, I imagine that just adds to the experience.
Yeah, it's not only IMSA and IndyCar. It's also this year is Formula One on the schedule again. So yeah, it's fascinating because coming from Europe, you would think I prefer Formula One. I do not. I love IndyCar, and I'm so excited for this weekend again because I think it's much more exciting. And of course, IMSA is my favorite modern series. These cars are just amazing. When they come together with the vintage, it's kind of overlapping because you have teams working in both modern and vintage. And then you have drivers who are doing both modern and vintage. And then you have the very young drivers, for example, in IndyCar or in Michelin Cup, who are so excited to see then the old cars, which have proper sounds and they are in a total different setup. And you have to shift gears instead of doing the pedals and whatever. And especially when it comes to Formula One, you see all these teams and drivers then standing next when we are lining up in the pit lane or something like that. It's just a very fascinating experience. Sometimes they also come to the support paddock to just get in touch and see the cars and have a conversation with the drivers. It's really nice. It's always a nice and exciting atmosphere.
Well, I know you've had your hand somewhere in around the Masters Historic Series since 2005. You are now in a new role with the company as the race series manager here in the U.S. Have you identified things that you want to put your touch on or put your spin on?
Well, we are still growing the series, and at the moment we are kind of realizing that Formula One is a little bit, how do you say, the drivers who own the cars are getting a little bit older and they are realizing that they might not be able to do too much racing anymore, or they change to our Masters Endurance Legends car, which are obviously much safer cars than the Formula One cars. So my list at the moment is first to grow our first, the new series, the Atlantics, much more, because there's still lots to spread the word and to have new drivers and to get in touch with teams which don't know of us yet. And then the other thing is to find younger people getting into the historic Formula One cars. So at the moment, I'm more a salesperson than event or race series manager. But I think it's all a combination of everything. And having contacts and meeting new people is a favorite thing for me. I like that. And I love I'm just a people person. It's that's the main thing at the moment, to grow the series and to make it stable, and that we have good entries and offering them the right events to join. Yeah, that's the main thing.
You were saying that sometimes, like former drivers from the Ferrari Challenge series, or I imagine word of mouth, a current competitor tells their friend about it. But where else do you feel like your future client could be? Would they be at a Concours? Could they be there? I imagine they're somewhat involved in the motorsports or automotive space. Where do you like to kind of seek out a potential historics racer?
Well, of course, that's Masters is good friends with HSR. The owners are good friends. So that's one possibility where I can get in touch with people who are racing the cars, or which might have cars in their garages, which they don't race at these events. So that's there. We are very grateful that we can join their events to make contacts for Masters. And the other thing is when IMSA has their races or test days, I'm always at the Daytona Speedway when they have test days, because there you can speak to teams in a very relaxed atmosphere. And most of them have the cars in their workshops. They just sit there, and then they realize like, oh, hey, there's another opportunity where we can race the cars again. Because we are open until 2017 for the Legends, for example, for Masters Endurance Legends. And so that gives them the possibility to run the cars. And for example, one of our customers is racing the X-Wayne Taylor Cadillac DPI car. So yeah, we have these cars back on track, because they realize, yeah, there is a future for those cars, right? That's mostly for the Masters Endurance Legends. For the historic Formula One cars and the Atlantics, you have to find on vintage events. And that's there I go and speak to the people and then spread the word. And of course, when you go on Facebook, there are groups where you can advertise. There's a group called Appreciation for the Atlantics, or you go on the IMSA fan pages, or Formula One is that's not so much, but that's a very unique group. But that's how it works, I think.
How do you approach, there's no secret that your client, it's a specific client. How do you approach hospitality at these events?
We usually bring our hospitality tent to the track. One of our preparers is our main guy who brings the tent. And there we have a place where you can bring family and friends. And we serve like sandwiches and snacks, hot and cold drinks, and some beer and wine after the day as well. So, and we have also like to make it a little bit relaxing for partners and wives, we have like magazines and all that stuff. So that's a place where you can meet up and be with us on the racetrack. Yeah, we open early in the morning and we close when the day is done.
Well, I think what's really great is you were mentioning COTA. It sounds like that one will align with F1. And while your drivers do their work on the track, then they will also be able to take in and enjoy the F1 race, correct?
Correct. Well, our tickets allow general admission, so you can see it from where you are. You are obviously not allowed to go in the F1 paddock. But yeah, we were there before. We have done it, I think, 3 or 4 times before. And you have a good view from the support paddock, and you can enjoy the concerts. And when you come to the pit lane, then you have the view into the garages, and you can interact with the teams when they are in the pit lane watching us going out. So it's a very exciting experience to go there. Yes.
During my research on you, I hope that doesn't sound stalkerish, but during my research on you, one of my favorite things that I found was on your Twitter, your bio, the first sentence says, "I choose to be happy." When did you adopt that mantra?
I think that was when I decided to offer Masters to work full time for them and move to the UK, because I realized that all the work and business I have done was always great, and I always dedicated my time and my experience and stuff to my business or my jobs. But I have never been so much excited and happy when I was on the racetrack. So it was the time being on the racetrack, the time spending with my colleagues, the time spending with the racing family, and doing my job there, which is actually the same like every other event marketing job, made me happy. So that was the moment when I decided, like, okay, I do that and I go fully for it. And that became my mantra. Yeah. And, you know, my dad, I'm coming from a very conservative background. Like, everybody had to be good in school, and we were very strict educated and study. And once it was in England, not too long ago, the whole family was in England. And I spoke to my dad and I said, like, well, all my brothers are so successful and business and whatever. So I'm actually your black sheep because I'm working in the racing business. And he said, like, well, you might be the only one really being happy. And I said, like, well, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
I think that's also maybe your dad saying that, did that confirm to you that he's proud of you?
Yes, because my dad being always my big role model and having a very strong dad and being the oldest in the family always made me like, okay, I have to prove that I'm successful and that I can make it work and that it works what I plan and what I risk, right? So, and there were up and downs. I mean, when I was self-employed, obviously you have your good times and then you have your bad times where you think like, oh, that's never going to happen. That's never going to work. But in the end, it always worked. And in the end, having conversations with my dad and my brothers made it happen that I really did what I wanted to do and to risk that. Because they are very intense in asking questions. Anya, are you sure? Do you want to do that? It's a big step. And then you're so far away. But all these questions I could always answer with a positive. He confirmed that he's fine and that he's proud of me. Yeah.
I still think that sentence, I choose to be happy, is so powerful. And why do you feel that happiness is a choice?
Well, it's actually, you can compare it to the saying, like, the glass can be half full or half empty, right? So if you choose to see the glass half full, then it's the choice to be happy, right? So I think many people are stuck in their life or in their situation. And of course, appreciating not everybody can do what I have done because of being, yeah, just me. And I'm on my own. So I don't have to worry about family or children or a partner. It's just like, it's just me, you know, and that makes it a choice. Happiness is, I think, a choice, because happiness doesn't mean to me like you have money or you have to be safe in where you are and how you feel. But I definitely think happiness is a choice in changing your lifestyle, in changing your goals, in changing your way, how you do it. And if the one way doesn't work, then you have to make the other. So if there is no left, then you have to go right. So it's always a choice, and therefore happiness is a choice, I think.
Anya Kimperman on the Women Shifting Gears podcast. It is time for the hot lap. So Anya, if you're going to go on a road trip, where would you like to go?
Colorado.
Okay. Have you been to Colorado yet?
No.
All right. This is you have a whole country to explore. This is so exciting. Okay. All right. So you're headed to Colorado. Of any choice in the world, what car are you driving on this road trip?
That's very easy. And Aston Martin Vantage V8.
Okay. And what's on the radio?
Garth Brooks channel.
Okay. Interesting. All right. Were you a Garth Brooks fan? How long have you been a Garth Brooks fan?
Well, I have been a country fan for a long time. And Garth Brooks is one of these guys. But he has this very great channel where he actually picks the music he likes. So you have not only country on that channel, you have really good music, a combination of rock, pop, everything. So that's the perfect channel because it gives you a variety of music. It's perfect.
Have you been to a country concert yet?
Not yet. I was trying to get to Toby Keith, but he was playing when it was Classic Sebring last year in Orlando, so I couldn't go. But it's on my bucket list.
Do you have any affinity for any particular road snack that's going to be in the car with you?
This bad thing, always when I'm on the road, I'm eating McDonald's, a cheeseburger, French fries, and a Coke. That's my road trip meal.
I'll be honest. I think that is the most honest answer that we've had, because everyone does that. We all get crappy food on a road trip. So well done on you on admitting it. And I know you had mentioned with your life, and I'm curious to what this answer will be, because it can be any person that you choose. You're driving on this road trip. Who's your passenger?
Well, literally, I need a bus to put everybody in there. But if you make me choose, I would ask my friend. She's great in having long conversations. And when we end up over the night, you can always have a good glass of wine with her, and you can talk about cars and life and everything. And if in case, she can take over the steering wheel as well. So yeah, that would be her.
Well, Anya, Masters Historics will celebrate their 20th year next year. When you look ahead at what kind of plans come to mind as you think about such a historic moment for the company, what do you hope to be implementing by next season for you all?
Well, it would be that we are getting even better and having more nice tracks on the schedule, and getting the series, as in the US and Europe, growing and growing. Europe is easier because there you have a lot long basement and good contacts and travel. So I really want to make it work that it comes here to that success as well. And we will see. Maybe the 20th anniversary helps to promote that even more.
Anya Kipperman on the Women Shifting Gears podcast. Thank you.
Thank you.
This Women Shifting Gears podcast, driven by Hemmings, is a production of GS Events.